My name is Sherry, and I'm an alcoholic, and I love AA. My sobriety date is January the 10th of 1990, and by the grace of God and all you guys, I'm grateful to be here. And thank you for inviting me, all of y'all, and for little old Robert back there. My kids think I've been with Samuel Jackson this weekend. And the committee. The first time I came to Woodstock, first time I came to Mont Eagle was in 1998. And it was an amazing experience, and I'm glad to be here now. Anyway, I'm going to tell you, and I love the speakers. I hadn't heard Chip before, and I learned from him, and I hadn't heard Cushing before, and I learned from him, and I love Amanda, and I love Al-Anon, and I love all you guys. And I was thinking about when Cushing said, you know what, I'm here to share what I was like, what had happened, and what I'm like today. I have a sponsor. Her name is Mildred Frank. She lives in Canada. She'll be 51 years sober next month. I talk to her every week. She knows that she's my sponsor. And we went through the steps from the beginning, and I'll tell you that in my story. The greatest gift that God gave me in this program is sponsoring people. And that's what I love more than life itself. I think that's what keeps going. I learn from all of them, and I'm definitely a better person because I've been sponsoring a lot of people, and I keep doing it. And thank God I don't have to invent on the solution. It's all in the book. And I don't care where you've been, how long you've been there, or what you're doing, the solution is exactly the same. And so, let's see, I have a home group. Our home group is 50 years old in Memphis. If you're ever in Memphis on Monday and Thursday night at 7, we are a traditional AA group. You know, we are 50 years old. We believe in conference-approved material. We are a large group. We did not close over COVID. Half the groups in Memphis, since I've been in, are closed already. And when I remember early on, my sponsor 30 years ago said that if AA ever got destroyed, it'd be from within. And I can see it, but not in our home group. We have young people, and we have old people, and we stick by the book, and it works. And we have a lot of young people. That's kind of a test for me, but because I am absolutely a big book thumper. I think we're in AA, so we need to do as AA does. So I was taught, when you come in, if you're a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, then do what Alcoholics Anonymous does, and you join a home group. And you went, now this, I'm just, this is my experience, so I get to tell it, which is easy for me, that I was at my home group unless I was sick or speaking somewhere else, and we met twice a week, and we did what the big book said, and I was at every business meeting, and it had nothing to do if I wanted to be there or liked it. It was a responsibility, and I still believe that. I'm going to go quick through my drunk a lot because I'm old, and I think the best part of this whole program is now. I was born in 1953. I'm a baby boomer. I was born in Nashville, Tennessee, but I was born to a bunch of Yankees. And I don't know if there's any Yankees in this room, but my parents were from the North. There's a Yankee back there. My oldest brother, oh, you're a Yankee too. Well, y'all are in recovery. You're not like my parents were. My parents were not, you know, if you look good, you were good. My father was an alcoholic. There was no hugging or kissing or eating grits or cooked food, anything. It was totally different. I did not know till I came into Alcoholics Anonymous that I was the way I was. I learned a lot from how I was grown up. I have a twin, so from day one, I felt like I was gypped. I got half for everything for Christmas, got half of everything for birthday. He was a boy. He was smart. I was a girl. He was skinny. I was fat. He was the smart. Back then, they didn't have kindergarten. So we went to first grade. I didn't know how to tie my shoes, so Terry tied them for me, okay? Everything I remember, my first memory now is fear. I didn't know till I came into Alcoholics Anonymous what the fear was. I didn't know that my parents did the best they could when I got here. I didn't know any of this. I have an older brother, and, you know, my parents always thought that they loved him the most because they gave him everything, okay? Back when I was born... My parents wanted me to be a secretary, so I went to Drawn's Business School in Nashville, Tennessee, rode a bus. We had moved to Brentwood in 67, and they wanted me, and I learned how to type. I'm a real good typist. I didn't want to be a secretary. I was very rebellious. I started drinking when I was 13, and I love the way, when the book says that ease and comfort of the first drink, all of a sudden, I wasn't fat, I wasn't a twin, I wasn't stupid, and I was 13, and I had arrived. I wanted to be Janis Joplin. This is the Woodstock era. I had my elephant pants and wanted to be a hippie, and I couldn't wait to live home. But I would take my dad's Seagram 7 and drink it, sit in my room, listen to Santana and Led Zeppelin, and I couldn't wait to leave. So when I was 17, girls don't go to college. My twin's going to UT. My oldest brother has flunked out every school in the state of Tennessee, so they have to go somewhere. You know, he's still playing around. So I go to Memphis State. This is in the 70s, okay? I had arrived. Fraternity part, I loved it. They said that when you have your first blackout, you're probably crossed the line of out. Once I started drinking in the book, I didn't stop. It says, even if you want to, you can't. You don't know how much you're going to have. You're probably an alcoholic. That's me. And it had nothing to do. My father was an alcoholic. He died drunk. And he was in World War II. He went to World War II when he was 18. They started drinking. And I drank every drink I did to deserve here. It took me 25 years to get here, okay? But I'll tell you about the disease. It's a powerful disease. My father died with the CTs, with his stomach out here, looking like he was pregnant and his legs were this big, and he could only drink a little bottle of airplane alcohol, and he'd be drunk. And he had cirrhosis, and he was going to die in 5 years. And my mother is Miss Codependent. She's Melody Beatty's wonder child. They had been married 60 years, so all she knew is what she knew. She was a farmer. She came from Illinois. My father was from Chicago. He was the Al Capone. This is Al Capone days. Not that he was in Al Capone, but he loved all that stuff. He loved talking about St. Valentine's Massacre, all that kind of stuff. He never talked about World War II. Not one time did I ever talk about it. And he flew in an airplane. So let's go back. I'm in Memphis State, and I had arrived. I woke up one day in the dorm, and I was black. My whole right side was black and blue. And they said, Sherry, this is a Four Horsemen. She goes, you remember what you did last night? Now, I don't remember even where I was last night. They said, well, you were playing with the band at the Pike House. And we didn't even know you could sing. I said, I can't sing. I said, but, you know, I remember. I didn't remember anything in the big book. Everything, when I see this big book, I can see people that normally wouldn't match. My gosh, you ought to see the people I work with. You know, me and Mildred, my God. You know, I was scared of Mildred for at least 5 or 10 years, you know. But I wanted what she had. She knew something in this book that I didn't know. I've always had teachers that people tell me they're not heroes, but they're spiritual giants for me. I've been so blessed. So I'm at Memphis State in the 70s, and once I start, I don't stop. They had Purple Passion. If they had drugs back then, I didn't know. And everybody's getting married now. I'm getting out of school, and everybody's getting married. And so they introduced me to my husband, who was 6'6", and drove a brand new 98, had a white leisure suit, looked like Elvis with these big sideburns, and had money and had a recording studio in Memphis. And I had arrived. He picked me up. He took me to, you know, we went to a restaurant, and I was drunk. I could never do anything without being drunk first. Alcohol worked for me. I was very introverted. I didn't go to a convention in Alcoholics Anonymous till I was 10 years sober because I couldn't be around a lot of people. I couldn't walk into my home group at 18 years sober until Mildred told me, walk in the front door like everybody else, and sit down and tell me what happens to you. I'm full of fear. I break out in a sweat. Whoever was talking about holding the hands, you know, I still had fear of people. Sponsored a lot, but I couldn't be in a big group. She said, you don't have to figure out why you are the way you are, Sherry. Just take the action. So, and it has nothing to do with how you feel. And when you walk in that room, do you look like Bill or Bob in the picture? One's frowning, one's happy. You know, I want you to start faking it. Act as if. Well, I know how to act as if. So I'm going to back up. I marry Jim in 90 days, and I'm drunker than Cooter Brown. We have a big, big wedding in Memphis. But he came when he picked me up, you know, we went to Pyrenees, and at that time was a restaurant that went like this. Now, remember, I'm already drunk. I can't go out. I can't do anything without alcohol worked for me. I was very introverted. I had to be drunk to go out to do anything social. And this restaurant, I was drunk, so Jim, you know, I had to go to the bathroom. When I went back, you know, the restaurant's going around like this. And I go, you know, I'm going in, I have one eye open, one eye shut, then I'm looking for a 6'6", good-looking man in a leisure suit. And I saw that he only drank about this much of his wine. I said, are you cheap or what? He goes, what do you mean? I said, well, because I wanted a whole bottle, okay? I had started in the big book where it says you tried all these different things. I had no intentions of quitting drinking. I never went back to Nashville again because my dad never got sober. So I never did go back there. I was a very rebellious child, okay? And so my story's going to go through that because I want to talk about the solution. But anyway, I started having... Oh, I forgot to tell you, I went to pharmacy school. Okay, so now I can only drink on the weekends because I need to study. I'm not the smart... Remember, I made... Well, I didn't tell you, but I made a 13 on ACT. Back when I went to school, if you were a Tennessee resident, you got in college. You went to UT or Memphis State, you know, anywhere. It didn't have anything to do with being smart. You were a Tennessee resident. My twin made a 31, so of course he gets all this money to go to UT Knoxville. And, you know, now my other oldest brother has flunked out of five colleges in Tennessee. But, you know, my perception of everything was different as a child. I had no idea that the way I see things were so different. And when I'm working with people, I realize we have to meet them where they're at. Everybody comes from a different background. Everybody comes from different how they were raised. And a lot of people have had a lot of trauma. And I don't remember most of my childhood. So that's another issue. As far as getting in trouble, I want to talk about my kids too. My children were 4, 8, and 12 when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. How many people in here have kids when you got here? Yeah. I mean, it's a big deal, you know. They were 4, 8, and 12, and I absolutely am convicted that God puts the right people, the right circumstances, and everything in my path exactly when I need them. I had a sponsor at that time that said, you put all three of your kids on this seat over here, and you take the action that this book says. I'm going to tell you, I did tell you I married Jim. I didn't tell you that I got arrested that night that we were at Pyrenees driving and drunk. So what I would do is I just didn't drive and drink again, okay? And I was in pharmacy school. You can't get felonies, get arrested, and all that kind of crap and graduate. They had rules, okay? I was supposed to be a professional. So let's see. I talked my way out of it. I could talk my way. I said Nick was 5. He was my oldest at that time. Well, he was the only. Well, Natalie was 3. And, you know, I talked my way out of it. I said that my son was dyslexic, and I was a Germantown housewife, and I was, you know, had a Rolex and a little Volvo, and I don't get out much, and the police let me go, okay? I continued to drink, and when my third child was born, he had a hole in his heart, JL, and he's now 40, but he had a hole in his heart. And so in the book where it says you want to stop, I really did want to stop, but I could not stay stopped. And so I was at the hospital at Baptist East, and I said, God, if you don't have him go to Birmingham Children's Hospital to have heart surgery, I'll never drink again. And I'm in the hospital, and I'm raising, I'd have sworn on my life I wouldn't drink again. JL had to stay in intensive care. I go home. I cannot stay stopped. And I started drinking. Then the guilt comes on, okay? JL does come home, and once I drink, now I'm drinking daytime and night. And I had a friend that owned a liquor store, and so I had my bourbon anytime I wanted it. I would go to work. At the very end, I'm working in South Haven, Mississippi. I'm speeding this up because it's 1990. In the late 80s, they had every hospital had a treatment center. St. Joseph had one. Baptist had one. Bowl had one. Methodist had one. It was called Methodist Outreach. And I'm the pharmacist consultant for Methodist Outreach. I don't know anything at all about alcoholism. I start drinking as soon as I leave work, and I don't stop, and I pass out. And it worked for me. I'd go home, and I would be, nothing bothered me. And I would go home and start drinking on Friday night. Couldn't drive because I'd already gotten arrested for it. So I was Sue Ellen, and Jim was JR. You know, we were Dallas. That was, you know, I loved it. And then I'd drink till I passed out. Every time I drank, I drank till I passed out. And I would try changing from the beer. The only thing I didn't drink was scotch, and I hated scotch. Jim would drink one drink, and he was okay. He didn't want any more, you know. We'd have pizza, and, you know, I'd want a 12-pack, and Jim would want one beer, and that would be it. So in 1990, I get a phone call, I'm in South Haven, Mississippi, which at that time the area code, there's so many God things that as I look back, the longer you stay sober, the more things you're going to see that God was there. You know, we were talking about the history. If this hadn't happened, if this hadn't happened, if this hadn't happened. I get a phone call. I'm in South Haven, Mississippi. Now, I'm waiting until, I'm a very functioning alcoholic, okay? So I'm waiting till the cleaning crew leaves. It's 9 o'clock, and they're going to leave, and I'm waiting till 9 o'clock for them to leave, and I'm going to kill myself. I had tried to quit drinking on my own. Oh, I forgot to tell you, we had, in 1990, my dad was in Nashville, Tennessee. He had got his tongue cut off. He was in a wreck. He almost killed a five-year-old, and it was 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I get a phone call, and they say in Nashville, he was at Vanderbilt, and they said, you've got to come home. Somebody's got to have an intervention for your father. I didn't know what an intervention was, and I'm in Memphis, and I'm the hero child. I'm drinking. I was drunker than Cooter Brown when my twin called me that on Friday night. I didn't know what happened, but the next day, Terry goes, did you not know what happened last night? And I go, and the sad part was I didn't know. I was black. I was drunk. And he said, and I'm in Memphis. He goes, well, you know, Dad's got to have an intervention, whatever that is. And the saddest thing about all this is I knew it was bad, and I thought Dad had died, and I didn't care, okay? But I knew now I have to learn what an intervention is. Now I'm running outreach at Methodist Hospital, and I'm the only one not in recovery, okay? At that time, I mean, this is where Jerry Lee Lewis, other people in Memphis, that they, it was a treatment center that did Big Book, and it was a good thing. This was in... Doris went to outreach, not that it helped her, but it was in the 80s, and we had a lady named Ann. There's so many God things. When they called me, I had to go to Nashville, have an intervention. There was a man named Dr. Anderson Spicker who had just started a program, said, just say no. And he was at Vanderbilt, and he was in charge of Vanderbilt. He wasn't an alcoholic, but he just wondered why these surgeons, the smartest people on the face of the earth, once they started drinking, they couldn't stop. And they may have been drunk. He was telling me a story about a surgeon that quit 30 years before that, goes to Europe, has a couple of glasses of wine, and dies with cirrhosis in 6 weeks. He told me that the disease progresses whether you're drinking or not. And he said, but also recovery progresses. You get out of this program what you put into it. And so I listened to this man. And then Jenny Austin was from Cumberland Heights, and she talked about the family program. She talked about her husband going to Hazleton in the 70s, and he left and got drunk immediately, and then she started the family program. She taught me about Al-Anon. So I'm the hero child. Okay, we're going to have an intervention. I'm going to quit drinking, and if the answer to this is to stop drinking, and I'll get Jim into Al-Anon. I had my kids going to Alateen and Alitots, and I'm not drinking. This is why in the Big Book where it says self-knowledge will avail you nothing, I wanted to kill myself. I'm in South Haven, Mississippi, and the phone rings, and it's 9 o'clock, and it was Jenny Austin. And she said, Sherry, something pulled me out of it. It was a 201 club in Nashville then, to call you. And I said, oh, my God, Jenny, I had a bottle of Elleville. Sitting here, I know how many to take and be dead in an hour, and I said I was going to kill myself. This is why I know not drinking and not having a program is not the answer. It almost killed me, but the good news about it made me desperate as the dying can be. At that time, you couldn't go to treatment unless you drank. Insurance would pay it, but she said you're going to have to go get drunk, you know, to be able to go to Hazleton. I knew once I picked up a drink, I wouldn't stop. I already knew that. I said, no, I can't do that. I'd already not had a drink for several months. And she said, then I'm going to give you a week. You've got to, and also I had a therapist. I forgot. I had a therapist, and I wanted to do fifth step a la Hazleton. I had Hazleton's guide, and I wanted to go to Hazleton, but I had to drink, but I got the guide. And so I'm reading it out, and I've got it all. I got my four step all done, all figured out. And Jenny goes from Nashville. She said, sure, you got 1 week to go to AA and get a sponsor. She said, whether you need Al-Anon and ACOA and all that stuff, that's fine. But you got to go to AA, and if it won't give you all you need, there are outside people to go to, but you need to go there, and you got 1 week and call me back. So I go to I'm in Memphis. I'm going to different groups, and Germantown Happy was on Sunday night. It's the last night. And I go up, and I'm sitting there, and I'm literally, I want to kill myself. It's horrible. And my sponsor had it. The lady that was sitting there was probably only about five women then. She goes, something pulled her. She wanted to watch Murder, She Wrote. It was on Sunday night. But then all of a sudden, she said something pulled her to go to Germantown Happy that night. And she walked in with a big book. And I go, oh, my gosh. Well, I had I was that was my second time. The first week I went, and there were some old-timers named Frank and Jane, and there was this real pretty blonde, and I said, Frank, I'm going to ask her to be my sponsor. And he goes, no, you need to wait. They told me to wait. Wait till next week. So next week when I went, Tracy came. Nobody told her to come. It's a God thing. Pulled her out. She wanted to watch Murder, She Wrote, but she came, and she had a big book. So I go up to her, and I said, will you be my sponsor? And she said, well, we have this page on page 25. No, first of all, she went to 100, that you're going to walk day by day with a new man. And if you do, good things are going to happen to you, but good things are going to happen to her. And then she said, I want you to call me every day at a certain time. She said, what time do you get up? And I said, well, I'll get up at 7. Okay, well, then you're not ready for this step yet, but it says upon awakening, ask God, direct your thinking. She said, I'm telling you, if you take the action that the big book says, you don't have to feel it, you don't have to like it, you don't even have to think it's a good idea. She was 16 years less educated than me. Didn't matter about education. Doesn't matter about anything else. But she hung with the old timers, and she was in this book. So after a week, I bought her an alarm clock. I went to Germantown Happy, and she said, what is that for? And I said, so I don't have to wake you up anymore. She said, no, this is not why you're calling me. You're calling me because there's going to be a time when you're going to be in trouble. And she said, I want you to talk to me. And on page 25 at the bottom, it says, there's no middle of the road. And it's whatever my middle of the road is. So I said, I'll do anything, because I was desperate as a dying could be. I was going to kill myself, okay? I know that alcohol wasn't my problem. Natalie, at this time, was like 6, and I'm a rager, okay? I'm angry. I sent her to school. I cut all of her hair off. She wouldn't brush it. She had all these snarls, so I cut all of her hair off like buckwheat, and I sent her to a private school. This is what I did, not drinking. Okay, I hadn't had an ounce to drink when I did that to Natalie. I didn't have an ounce to drink when I did these things to my kids, because I was very angry. I was exactly like my father was. I'd walk in that house, maybe the shoes were all on the ground. So they never knew what to expect when I came home, because I worked in South Haven, came back to Germantown, and I couldn't drink, and I wanted to drink. So Tracy goes, we got to get in this. And I said, well, I got this, Tracy. I've got my four-step a la Hazleton, and I'm all for treatment center. I was on the board of Serenity Recovery for 25 years. I'm not dogging treatment centers. I'm just telling you the story I had. And Serenity House, we're in Memphis, and we got Joe and Charlie's Recovery Dynamics. And to this day, any alcoholic that comes in, or drug addict, I don't care what you call them, but they go to Serenity Recovery, they're going to get a big book, they're going to get a 12 and 12, and they're going to get Joe and Charlie's Recovery Dynamics. And I don't care if you come back to Serenity House 5 times, you're going to get one every time you go. And you're going to go through the fifth step just like any other treatment center. But we're free. We're nonprofit, so we have a lot of, you know, drug court and a lot of young people. A whole lot of young people that are doing heroin, and it's going to kill you. And to me, I believe in entire abstinence, but they can't drink. And then they're going to go up to the totem pole here to heroin, and it's going to kill them fast. Anyway, so I've got Tracy, and I had Hazleton's guide there, and I'm so proud. I had it all figured out. I had all the four-step stuff. And then she goes, well, Sherry, that's great. But if I'm going to help you, we've got a big book. And I start at the preface. And we're going to go through every page and every line, and then we're going to go through the 12 and 12, and we're going to do the steps. And that's how I do it. If you don't want to do it, and you have to have a home group, you have to go whether you want to go or not, and then you go to business meeting. I said, okay, and I believe in entire abstinence, okay, and you're going to call me every day till we get through the fifth step. I'm telling y'all, I did it. I don't trust anybody. I was raised in an alcoholic home. I didn't trust anybody. Tracy relapsed after nine months. Okay, so it's not the messenger, it's the message, okay? But Tracy was exactly what I needed. She hung with the old-timers. So I'm with Franklin Williams, I'm sitting with Ray Davis, I go to Louise, I'm going to these old-timer groups because that's where Tracy was going. And I'm sitting right next to him. And she said, you sit next to Franklin Williams, but don't you talk. And he'd say, trust God, clean house, and help others. And she said, don't you forget it. I said, okay, I got it. But Tracy was a real pretty young girl. And I didn't know what Victoria's Secret was. Not the clothes she wore. She wore this lotion that smelled good. Natalie loved it. My daughter goes, let Tracy come over, because Tracy'd fix her hair. I'm not a poofy person. I wasn't even a hugging person till I got here, okay? But it was how I was raised. You know, Mildred, to this day, if she doesn't know you, hug her, she'll get stiff. She can't help it, but it's where we came from. But and some of our defects stay. We don't want it, but we'll try to do better. But we have to, we're human. We're human first, okay? So Tracy smelled like Victoria's Secret. We'd meet, and we'd go through this. And if it was in the book and said, sit an hour after your fifth step. Now, but we have a lady in our group who's probably the oldest black female in the state of Tennessee. I think she's got 48. I know the oldest in Memphis. She's got 48 years. And she sits in our, she's our greeter. We're very traditional, our group. She's a greeter. And she, you know, she, but she sometimes, she, and she tells her opinion. Well, she has that choice. If it's a discussion meeting, and she's really big in not having relationships, okay, which a lot of the young people don't like to hear Maurice talk, but this is her experience, and it's true, okay? Well, Tracy, my sponsor, was going to be married three times in those 9 months. She was engaged, got the ring. My daughter's all excited because Nellie goes, I'm going to be in a wedding, and, you know, and she's all excited. Well, she had relationship issues, meaning Tracy. She didn't stay sober after that 9 months. Well, she was my lifeline. I'm very introverted. I go to the old-timers meeting, but I don't talk. But I go where she tells me to go, and I'm going to the oldest group, being with the old people. So I knew the old people. I said, Jerry Stairs said sober. I said, gosh, I can't stay sober if Tracy's not here. She goes, hey, Jerry, goes, Sherry, it's not the messenger. It's the message. It's in this book. It's your responsibility. You're going to have to find somebody else. Because Tracy was drinking. I was devastated. Whoever was talking about the people relapsing, she was my lifeline. Okay, and my kids had gotten close with her, but she was so good because she would. I was a perfectionist and a control freak, you know. My kids may, Nellie one time, you know, got a red Kool-Aid out of the refrigerator, dropped it, and spilt all over everyone. I'm a rager. I would have hit her 5 years before that, or 3 years before that. And I'm telling, Tracy goes, well, you're going to have to change even if you don't know. You're going to have to be kind and loving. Try giving each child 15 minutes attention every day. I never did that. She said separately, whether it's Natalie, Nick, JL, I had three, okay? And I'd do that and say something nice about Jim, what he does. Not that he has a cute polo shirt on or drives a nice car. He had a Rolls at one time. No, not about outside stuff. This is he's very respectful. He opens the door for you. He's a Southern Baptist. His mindset is, if you look good, you are good. This is how he was raised, okay? So one time I opened up the refrigerator and dropped everything all over the floor. Natalie and JL and Nick are going like this, like I'm going to go crazy. And I went, well, it's an accident. It happens. And I did it on purpose because Tracy told me to, you know. And so I would do these things. But my kids, you can't talk to kids. They're watching you. And she said, when you go to a meeting, you got to come home after an hour. My kids couldn't. Two of them couldn't tell time, and so they knew that after two cartoons, I was going to be home. I didn't get to go to Shoney's afterwards. I didn't do anything for 10 years. I worked full-time, had three kids, and went to my home group, and that was, and I didn't go to Bluff City till I was 10 years sober. And then I had, you know, Louise and Mary made me come in because I wanted to go in the back, sit down. Well, when Tracy relapsed, I got another sponsor. That, you know, I loved what she said, and she had just moved to Memphis, and everybody loved her and everything. And I learned from my sponsors. She was a control freak. She had lost her children, and she wanted me to fire everybody I sponsored that didn't have children, and fire everyone that was on any kind of medication. Now, I do believe in entire abstinence. I'm not talking about antidepressants. I'm talking about Xanax or Klonopin or smoking your marijuana. If it's a controlled drug by the federal government, it's not Sherry Stiles' opinion. It is what it is. It's addicting, okay? And I don't believe you have to have that to continue. This is my personal opinion. I work in a candy store. I can take, when Xanax was invented, it was the first non-addicting benzo, and it became number one in about 2 years, or maybe 1 year, same thing as Tramadol. So anyway, that sponsor was not sober, and I knew it. Actually, at that time, you could read computers, and I did everything that was illegal. There weren't HIPAA laws back then, but I could, you know, I could tell you what Mary was on. You know, I could tell you what you're on. I could say, you know, these people. But she was my sponsor. And then when I heard her speak one time, talking about getting off of 100 milligrams of Valium day, quick, God just removed it. You can go to you can die getting off benzos that fast. And I was with Gina Norman's husband at the time, and he heard the same thing. I thought, zam, bam, God isn't going to do for you what you can do for yourself. You're going to be dead getting off that much for 10 years. But no, she just woke up, and it just happened. But so, of course, I had to look, and I did. Didn't say anything, but she was lying. I don't see, to me, honesty is the first principle of this program. I don't care what you do, but be honest about it. I was sponsoring a girl. I said, I want you. She was in a fight with her husband. I said, you need to go get something to eat. You go to Burger King, get you something to eat, and then call me back. Okay, I'll do it. So she called back. She said, oh, yeah, I ate a cheeseburger with everything. I said, well, good. About 4 hours later, she goes, Sherry, I lied to you. I said, what are you talking about? She said, I didn't go to Burger King. I didn't eat a cheeseburger. I just got some cheese and crackers at home. I said, the good thing, just be honest. Why did you lie? I mean, whoever was talking about lying over stupid stuff, I mean, I've got sponsees that lie over stupid stuff. You know what I mean? I'm going, okay, but be honest about it. I don't care. You know, you just have to be honest about it. So now I'm looking for somebody. And at that time, there was two people. It's kind of like Mutt and Jeff and me. It was Louise and Mary. And Louise spoke all over the United States. She spoke here. And Mary was under her. And so I asked Mary, I went up to Mary, and I said, Mary, will you be my sponsor? And I said, well, first of all, do you take drugs? Now, Mary had about 25 years at the time. She goes, drugs? She said, I'm a pill head. I said, what is that? She said, well, I took Imprin. It was called Imprin number 3, but it was codeine. She said, oh, yeah, I took that for 8 years. I'm a pill head. I don't take pills. She said, oh, I do take one pill every day. I said, oh, God. Oh, it's not Adderall or Xanax or something. She goes, Premarin. I said, Premarin? And she said, Premarin. It's a hormone. I don't care about hormones, Mary. I said, I just care about drugs. You know, if the federal government says it's addicting, it's a controlled drug. And back then, a lot of people had Hep C that I hung with. And back then, some doctors said, oh, you're going to be so nervous, you got to take Klonopin, all this stuff. And I was sponsoring a girl. And I said, we'll talk to the doctor. I don't believe you have to be on that to take your interferon. You know, let's ask them. You know, and I saw people relapse over that, okay? So there's a reason for it. I've had a lot of experiences. So I have Mary now. Mary is my life. Computers had just come out. And let's see. I forgot to tell you one of the most important things. In 1996, we were in Atlanta in the Olympics. Not in the Olympics, but we were on a boat, okay? Now, Tracy had already relapsed my first sponsor, and I didn't have Mary yet. Second sponsor was on drugs, and so now I'm with Mary, okay? And I'm in a boating accident, and I break my back, okay? And as soon as it happens, and the kids wanted me to, you know, Mom, you're a dud. Go, you know, get on. And we were, it was a, like a ski boat. It was going fast. And there were some huge things out there in Lake Lanier during the Olympics. I mean, we're talking huge boats. And we hit a wave. I went up, went like that on my back, and it cracked it, and I broke it. Immediately, I couldn't move. And my first thought was, I'm paralyzed from the waist down. I couldn't move. And I go, oh, God, you know, I'm sitting, oh, God. And I thought about Superman. I don't know. Christopher Reeves had just been paralyzed. He did, I mean, not on a boat, his horse, and he was paralyzed. That's the first thing I thought of was, oh, my God, I'm going to be Christopher Reeves here. And I'm yelling and screaming, not wanting hydrocodone. I know about drugs. I'm not wanting anything. They have to carry me off to the top in Lake Lanier's down here, and the cabin's up here, and they got to get me to the hospital. And so my six husbands got me up like this, and then my little other son, I'm going like this, and I'm cussing the whole way up the mountain because I'm in pain, horrible pain. And I get to the cabin. This is real important because for me, it was the emotional pain. I get a phone call from Nashville, Tennessee, that my spiritual, Jenny Austin from Nashville, had just died. The emotional pain crushed me. I wanted to drink. I couldn't walk. And I realized, and so I yelled at Natalie, who had already been to Alateen too many friggin' times. And she, I said, Natalie, go get me a beer right now. My kids had never seen me cry. This is in 1996. Natalie was born in 83, okay? And so she goes, you go get it. Because my kids thought, you have to be careful what you tell your kids. My kids thought if I drank, I died. Because I tell them if I drink, I'm going to die. Well, they literally thought, you have a drink and damn, you're going to go down like this and you're going to die. She goes, you go get it. And then she goes in the bedroom and gets a big book and she says, call Tracy. Because Tracy was the one that we met every week. She didn't know that Tracy had relapsed. She didn't know that I hadn't talked to Tracy. She didn't know that I didn't even have a sponsor at that time. And, you know, I make it back, and I didn't want any hydrocodone, didn't want any of that. I was in pain. It was the emotional pain that made me want to drink. And I said, God was doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. I couldn't walk. Refrigerator was full of beer. Everybody there was hungover but me and the kids, but I couldn't walk. So I saw that God was doing for me what I couldn't do. I came back. I knew that I had to get a sponsor, and I got Mary, the third one. And she was a Bill Wilson addict. She was everything Bill Wilson said. We had got a computer, and she said, and you're going to start going to conventions. I said, oh, Mary, I'm scared. I said, no. And what Tracy did in the book, it says there's other helpful, but we went through the steps with Tracy, my first sponsor, exactly like it said, okay? And then it said there's other helpful books. She said, I want you to read the 24-hour reflection every day. This was Tracy, day one. Gave me a 24-hour reflection. I want you to call me every day after you read that. This was my very first sponsor, and I called her every day till the fifth step and told her what it meant to me. And I'm real codependent, so I'm going to be real. If it means that to you, it'll mean it to me. I want everybody to be happy, okay? I've been doing this since first grade. I'm the actor running the show. I've got a mask up here, okay? So when I got back to, I'm jumping around. I don't take Adderall. I'm sorry. Y'all got to follow through. I'm back now at Mary's my sponsor, and Mary and Louise had dedicated her life. There's a lot of people in this. Well, there's 12 people I know that they dedicate their life. My sponsor's one of them. Clancy was one of them. They may travel 50 weekends out of the year, and they're old, and they would do it. And so she had. There's only one conference in Memphis at the time. It was called Bluff City, and it had 1,000 people. It was just way too many, but you know, they made me go. They say you take the action regardless of how you feel, and you need to meet some of these people, you know, get out of the box. Well, I don't remember what year Mary was. Mary had hurt herself. This is the sponsor that was with Louise, and they went all over together. And Louise, like I said, traveled at least 50 weekends. Mary would go with her, and Mary had two little boys. Mary had hurt her back, goes to the hospital there in Collierville. And to make a long, when they were doing a heart test, they ruptured her colon, which I didn't know all this stuff. Now I'm working at Walgreens full-time at the time. And Mary is in the hospital at Baptist East for 3.5 months. And Mary's afraid. Now, Mary had 30 years. I forgot to tell you, her son died of an overdose. And David had every old-timer for Leon Maines that came here. Any old-timer, Mary goes, if anybody, just like Clancy and Clancy, if anybody could help these people, you would think they could. They knew everybody. But they didn't have the power to get anybody sober. And Mary's son died, and it was the biggest thing in Memphis that I'd been to. Now Mary's in Baptist East, and she didn't want to be left alone. Well, I was working with some new people, and if you do what this big book says, even if they don't know, if they keep doing it, they're going to get transformed. God works. He may not get the credit at first, but he's going to get it at the end, okay? And so, and they realize it's nothing out here that's going to change you. It's all in here. And like Mildred said, it has to get from here to here, or we're not going to change. You can read all you want to do. You can read all the books you want to do. You can pray all you want to pray, but if you don't experience, I'm human, ain't going to change. God's only going to do for me what he can do through me. And so that's why we have to keep, the first time, I got to go into Mildred. Now we're talking about Mary dying. She's three in the, I had somebody with Mary Porter 24 hours a day, 3.5 months she's in Baptist. I had the newcomer, do you work? Okay, well, Mary, you're going to be there. I'm the actor running the show. You're going to be there from 1 to 9. And then you're going to be there from 9 to 12. I saw when they worked, whatever. And I said, then we're going to have people. Mary had a son and a Down syndrome granddaughter and another grandson. I said, and you're going to have, the group's going to bring food to their house every night, okay? So that, and Mary did die. Mary goes, Mary Goshiri, now you're going to know what it means to be powerless. I'm powerless of whether I live or whether I die. But I'm going to die with integrity. And she said, and she did die. I was devastated. There was 500 people at Baptist. I leave Walgreens at 10 o'clock. I pretend like I'm the doctor, so I have my lab coat on. I pretend like I'm Lee Veron's, you know, associate, so I can get into intensive care. I did it for 3.5 months. And Lee goes, don't you ever embarrass me, Sherry. And don't you ever go behind that nurse's station or read the chart. Now, there is HIPAA now, you know. And I go, oh, Lee, I just want to see her. I'm not going to be stupid. And he goes, okay. So Mary died. I was devastated, and I can see it as if it was yesterday. Baptist East had, I bet there were 500 people. They were all lined up on the hallways everywhere, and they were all waiting for me to come in. Me and Mary were like this. Mary was a conference junkie, okay? So she told me, she's the one that helped me get out of the box. I want you to meet Bo and Shirley. We're going to go and meet Bo and Shirley in Bessemer, you know, Alabama. I'd meet these people. And I just loved them, you know. And as the more and more people, I loved it. And I saw, and I remember this gentleman was with Bo taping, I think, in 98. You know, these people were real. They didn't just talk the talk. They lived it. They did it, okay? And Mary got me into that. Well, so when Mary died, I'm devastated. My kids are devastated. They go, and I didn't want to drink, but I was angry, but I remember when Mary, my sponsor, died, she said, Sherry, I was angry for 2 years. She had been married 3 times, but the last husband, the one before James, was an AA person, and he went everywhere. Mary went with him. She said, when he died, she said, I was angry. She said, but I still kept coming back, and I went to my home group every time it met. I may not talk, and I was angry, but I was there. I'd take the action. So I remember, you know, I was devastated, and I gave my everybody. And there were people in Memphis talking, Sherry's relapse, and people I smiled, Sherry, aren't you upset they're talking about you? I said, no, they're always talking about me. I don't care. I said, I haven't relapsed. I said, I'm sad. I'm not happy. And I had to keep my mouth shut a lot. Well, I couldn't find anybody in Memphis, and Tom Iverson happened to be there at Bluff City, and I knew that his sponsor was out of town. I said, well, Tom, how do you do that? He said, Sherry, you're responsible for your recovery. I said, really? And he goes, yes, so you have to go get out of the box. Well, at that time, this is another God thing, my oldest son. I forgot. Because of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was very disciplined. So my children learned, if you have a commitment, you're going to do it. You know, my son, when he was in high school, Mom, everybody calls in sick. He worked at Cecil's. He was a sacker. And I said, you're not. If you're supposed to work Friday night, I don't care about the football game. You're going to work Friday night. So my kids learned this, okay? And Natalie and JL. And they also learned, Natalie learned, if you don't get it, it's okay, God's going to have something better. Because now I'm seeing that God really is in control of this thing. I just have to, and I see more and more stuff in this book. And I see now why it's happening. And I'm going out of the box like Tom told me. And so I get to fly free anywhere in the world. I used to be afraid to fly. Before Mary died, now I don't care. And I'm at Walgreens, and I leave, and I go meet Bo in Bessemer. He said, go here and go meet. You can go to Anchorage, Alaska, and, you know, all of Clancy's little P and June B, all these people, and Jaron Crane, Clancy. Oh, yeah, I loved them. I said, and I work I'm like that, in your face. Let's do this, you know. And then I went, every month I was somewhere different. In June, Akron has Founders Day. So a bunch of people had gone. I was going. And Gina, one of the members of our group, and I sponsored her at the time, she said, there's this lady that spoke Sunday morning. I've never heard anything like it. I said, really? Did you get her tape? Yeah. So I listened to it. I said, oh, my gosh. I said, I've never heard anything like that either. Her name's Mildred. And she said, you've got to hear it. You've got to go meet her. Well, I did. And so I knew, then I looked, and she was going to be at the Florida State Convention, and I'm going, I'm sitting there on the front row just mesmerized. Smartest person I ever met. Scared to death of her. But, I mean, she was smart. She knew this book. She could say things that came out of this book in 12 and 12. And Chuck Chamberlain 12-stepped her. I mean, we're talking, you know, Bill Wilson's doctor was her psych crazy doctor at one time. I mean, we're talking history here. So after about the third state, because I went every Tampa Bay Rand, I'm in Florida on this weekend, then I'm in Orlando on this weekend. I'm going there and I'm meeting her, and so I go up to Rick, who's Al-Anon, And Rick and Mildred were real close. I said, Rick, I need to ask her to be my sponsor. He goes, well, she doesn't like to sponsor long distance, but if she thinks it's God's will, Mildred will do anything if it's God's will. I said, well, I think it is God's will. Well, it's up to her, Sherry, not you. I went, okay. So I see her again, and she goes, she said, you're that Tennessee girl. I said, yeah. She said, well, go meet me at my hotel room. I'm having diarrhea now at 10 o'clock tonight. She said, what is it that you want of me? I said, I just want step 11. I want more step 11. She said, well, that's a good step, but there's 10 steps before that. And she said, and I had 18 years sober at this time. She said, I started the preface. Exactly the same words that Tracy had said 18 years before that. Exactly. See, it doesn't matter who the person is. It doesn't matter where they came from. Mildred and Tracy could not have been two more opposite people. But God knew that I needed all these things to keep me going. And she said the exact same thing Tracy did. I said, okay. And I didn't dare ask her if she took drugs. I knew, I didn't do that. But she said, I know you're serious, because she'd see me at these conferences. I'd sit there and I just was mesmerized listening to her, and she'd go, well, and the first time she goes, well, do you meditate? I said, well, no, meditate. I said, no, I've got these helpful books. I'm kind of like Bob B. When Bob B got up there last year and had his iPad with how many helpful books he reads in the morning, I loved him. I'd never heard anybody at the podium ever say that. And he had twice as many as I did. But I have a lot of helpful books. He has twice as many as I do. But I still read them. I read them today, this morning. Because I said, well, there's helpful books. And Tracy would always show me what was in the book, okay? And then Mary had a lot of books. And I said, well, Mary, why do we have to read all these helpful books? She goes, well, darling, because this is a disease of your mind. And I don't want you reading porno in the morning. And she said, so you read your helpful books. And I forgot, and do what the program is a program of action. You ask God to direct your thinking. It has nothing to do with if you believe it or think it's a good idea. You just have to know what you did before it didn't work, So now Mildred, I'm scared, Well, call me every Wednesday. She had sheets, of how to do the steps. And call me every Wednesday. And we'll meet, and you got to fly to Toronto and do your fifth step and, exactly by the book. And she goes, and then we got to meditation. She said, well, Sherry, that's something. And she knows the book. She didn't tell pages. She knows the 12 and 12. She didn't tell pages or any of that. She said, well, meditation is something that can be improved upon. It's an individual matter. She said, so can you do 20 minutes in the morning and 20 minutes at night? I said, because she was into Father. She read books, but she already knew it. It was like in her head. I said, God, because I've got all these little kids. I said, how about, and she's a teacher. Now, she was nice to me. I'm a whole lot nicer than I used to be, because I do sponsor a lot of nice people besides Doris that, one lady I sponsor, I've got to be around insulin just to sit by her. She's so sweet, but I'm learning, okay? So Mildred, and now Mildred and I are close. She's been my sponsor 20 years. But, she said, well, we'll start at 3 minutes and just be still. Not be thinking about going to the beach. She said, and she had a mantra that I did that I was comfortable with. And so I would do it. And she said, do it every day. She said, just for 3 minutes. Sherry, it's about being still. And she said, it's about obedience. God wants us to be obedient. I go, okay. It's not that you're going to hear things or see things. It's not about that. It's about being still. Well, I didn't know how to do it, but I could do the mantra. And I'd heard Jim Williams in Memphis at Bluff City said he bought a little book that just went 1, 2, 3, 4, and that's how he meditated. Now see, this is, people didn't talk about this at the podium 20 years ago, but he did, and he said the book cost him 25 cents at Goodwill, but what happened is he got disciplined to do it. But what happens is, Mildred goes, it's about the first fruit is emotional sobriety. Who doesn't want emotional sobriety? And all of a sudden, she said, everything seemed different. I was having spiritual experience. All of a sudden, I'm calmer. I'm not yelling at the kids. I'm being nicer to these people besides Doris. And things are I'm changing on the inside. I can't explain it. I'm just doing it, okay? I sponsor two people. Sherry, it didn't work. I'm not going to keep doing it. I said, well, no, you just have to keep doing it. I can't make people do it. I said, but it says do it, right? And Mildred said, keep doing it. Well, Mildred has been a lifesaver for me. She goes, so you're afraid of people. And she said, I don't. She said, Sherry, I'm not going to get into psychobabble. And if you've heard Mildred's story, she married her psychiatrist, and she's been had her brain fried 8 times and, you know, all this. But she knows this stuff. She said, I want you to tell. She said, don't ever give up on the newcomer. She said, Chuck Chamberlain came to my house for 5 years. Now, Chuck Chamberlain was somebody of importance. Didn't, of course, I didn't know him, but I read A New Pair of Glasses. I knew about this stuff. And she said, he came to my apartment for 5 years, and it took him at least 60 miles. He didn't live close to where she lived in Canada, but he came, and he always brought a man. And then Mildred would be drunk because she wanted to have a man over there, and Chuck would bring a man, and then Chuck would walk in, and he goes, Mildred, he said, well, she goes, come on in, Chuck and Frank, let's, you know, let me get you a drink. And Chuck would, very, very polished, say, Mildred, you know, we can't help you. We've got to go. Call me if you need me. He did it for he did it twice a year for 5 years. And she said, I asked Chuck, I said, why did you come back? And he said, because I never knew when the time was that you would be ready. And he said, she said, so don't ever give up on a newcomer, you know. And it taught me that. And so I've learned from all these people. So Mildred, I was trying to bring enthusiasm to Memphis. So Lee says, and I'm going to a lot of conferences, meeting all these people, getting fired up. Was that, you know, when Angie's first story, I'm off, you know, she's nervous. And it was just, you know, I was on fire for these people. They're real people. They've just dedicated their lives to AA. Good communicators. And then, you know, Lee goes, well, you can do it there, you know. So the first time, do it there in Memphis. We're going to bring it. We're going to bring some excitement to it. I said, okay. I'm not a political person, you know, all this stuff. I don't know how to do all this, but we had Clancy, we had Sandy Beach, we had Tom Iverson, we had Bob Bazans, we had Bob Darrell, we had Polly Pistol. I mean, we had 8 of the top that I knew of, okay? Unbelievable. And I charged $30, you know, and most of the people I paid, and it didn't work. It didn't work. And I'm sitting there sad, and the last one cost me like $4,000, and my husband goes, Sherry, you're just not doing it anymore. You can't make people want it. I said, but they're just missing it. I said, okay. I pick up, this is my last one that I'd done. I'd done it for 4 years. And I picked up a lady named Jenny from Arkansas. And she had been with Lois. So when I pick her up at the airport, I'm thinking she's like 80 or 90 years old. And she's like 50. I said, oh, my God. I said, well, Jenny, she said, you thought I would be old. I said, yeah. I mean, Lois has been dead a long time. She goes, no, I was real young when I was with Lois. But I learned a lot. And I was in the car. I said, well, this, it's not, because we lost so much money. I said, well, this is probably, if I hadn't signed another contract, it'll be the last Woodstock. I can travel. I'll go out. I'll go and see Dick in Atlanta, and I'll go to Cocoa Beach and see Clancy. I can go, okay? But I wanted everybody to get it, okay? You can bring a horse to water, but you can't make them drink. And so she said, well, Sherry, and I had a passion. I was on the board of Serenity House. So these young people are dying of heroin. I can't take it. I've got young people. 5 of my kids' friends died. It's just like, you know, I didn't understand it. And she said, well, then, Sherry, you've tried and it didn't work. It's not that it's a failure. You did try. You know, maybe somebody did get something out of it. And you did. I said, oh, yeah, I did. I loved it. Because it was priceless me spending that time with Sandy Beach and Tom Iverson and even Clancy and Polly and all them. It was priceless because some of them are still alive. Half of them are gone. And they were giants to me, no better than any of us, but they were good communicators. They had given their lives to AA, and me and Doris, she didn't get much out of it, but I did. We'd go back. I forgot to tell you why I hooked up with Doris. When my sponsor died, I'm sad. Oh, and I'm sitting angry in the group, and I go. And then somebody showed the big book that the, you know, first thing of success, you can't be angry, and that pissed me off. So I see Doris at a Germantown group. I don't go to that because I feel less than. I don't have a fancy car or buy fancy clothes or anything like that. And she makes me laugh. If it's in her head, it comes out. I said, Gina, I said, this lady, I said, she looks like Doris, has pouffant white hair. And you know, when it comes out of her, if it's in her head, it comes out of her mouth. And she goes, well, I got to meet her. Well, as soon as we did. So me and Doris, we go everywhere to get. Now, we lose a few. Because they'll be newly sober, and Sherry, you are so mean to her. I mean, just mean to her. They don't see that I've helped adopt three of her kids and been with her grandchildren for 5 years, taking them to school, taking them to juvenile court every day. So anyway, when I asked Mildred, it was awesome. Because she would. I love history, and Mildred was in the history. Okay, very kind to me. I'm not smart. I hadn't read Ghost. I hadn't read any of the stuff. I'm telling you, Well, if this wasn't taped, I'd say she's 91 years old and smartest person I've ever seen. I've never seen anything like it. And she can get up here at the podium and tell things just like Sandy Beach when he was in horrible pain. He said he was in the fourth dimension when he got up here. He told me, I'm in the fourth dimension when I'm in an AA room, Sherry, and I'm in harmony and I'm not in any pain. I said, that's the most incredible thing I've ever heard. Mildred can get up here and say the same thing, say the thing. Well, so I flew to Toronto to do my fifth step. And Mildred, I had her come to Memphis every Woodstock for 4 years. She came to Memphis. She come to my house. She goes, oh, my God, because I've got, at that time, 6 grandkids. We're talking little, running around, hopping, and we eat. I said, Mildred, we only have 15 minutes to eat. What are you talking about? I said, well, because the 2-year-old's going to be out trying to go up the steps, and the 3-year-old's going to be trying to hit this one. We got about 15 minutes. And then I got a picture of Mildred holding all 6 of them on my couch. I said, we have different lifestyles, Mildred, but we still have the same passion. And I said, I want what you have, and I'll keep doing what you do, even if I don't understand it, So I had to fly to Toronto and do the fifth step, and I'm a nervous wreck because she drives like Clancy, and Toronto's like L.A., going like this, and I'm going, oh, my gosh, I'm going to die here. But when you're 18 years sober, you're at a different place than you were at one. You know what I mean? You continue to grow, at least I have, and want more. And my mom, Mildred, she goes, do you know how to practice the presence of God? I said, no, that sounds good, but I don't know how to do it. And she goes, well, go to page 77 in your big book and read that top, to be of maximum service to God and others. Well, what's the most important word on that sentence? I said, God. Oh, that's a good word, but it's fit, F-I-T. I said, what do you mean, Mildred? She said, you have to fit yourself. That means you have to do something, Sherry. I went, okay. Well, I get a phone call that my mother had died. Oh, no. Okay, Mildred, I'd had Mildred in September. It's when I asked her to be my sponsor. And she said, well, I can tell a lot of your issues are from your mother and your dad. And my dad was an alcoholic, died drunk. My mom never got it. And she said, a lot of issues with your mother. I said, yeah, we're not close at all. And she said, where is she? I said, well, she's in a nursing home. I mean, skilled facility. It was $5,500 a month. We're not talking nursing home. It was a facility in Brentwood, okay, that was nice. She said, well, I want you to go there. And I said, Nashville's not close. Mildred, Nashville's about 200 miles from Memphis. That's okay. Just go twice a week. I said, and I'm working full-time at Walgreens. Well, I can work at night or whatever. So I get up and I go. And she said, you be of service to your mom. I said, okay. And I'd go and have to walk. If I even see Wheel of Fortune again, I break out in a sweat because I had to stay till that dadgum thing was off, and then I'd drive back to Memphis, and I'd be there with her. And I saw my mom was raised in the Depression. She was the way she was because of how she was raised. You know what I mean? And I just had to, but when she died, I was at total peace. I could forgive her. My dad was an alcoholic, and my sponsor at that time said, I want you to start, because I hated my dad. He said, well, I want you to start picking up Howard. Howard was an old man in our group in Memphis that was like 90, it seemed like. I want you to pick him up every day and take him to a meeting. You need to get out of yourself and do service work. They always told me that you have to be a good Samaritan every day. So I've always known that. It's a funny thing. My kids, Chick-fil-A, had come to Memphis. I've learned from all my sponsors what to do and what not to do. But Chick-fil-A came, and Tracy had me read name tags. And I'd say, oh, thank you, Mary, for giving us the chicken. And I'm carpooling, and then I'd go to McDonald's on the way back, and the kids in the car go, God, your mom knows everybody in Memphis, doesn't she? And Natalie goes, no, she reads name tags because her sponsor told her to. At Kroger, you sack your own groceries. If everybody's in this world to help everybody else, take some action and do it. And so I was told to do that. I still do it. I'll sack groceries at Kroger now. So Mildred, this was weird. Mildred had wanted me to practice the presence of God. I had my twin that I hated too, okay? And I'm not in Nashville, so I'm away from all these people. My oldest son, my oldest brother's in Beverly Hills. He's rich, lives next door to Danny DeVito, does cocaine every day. It's a different lifestyle. No kids, but that's my oldest brother, okay? I got along with him. But now my twin, oil and water, you know. He gets to retire a millionaire at 52. I'm working full-time at Walgreens at 64. I'm not happy. So anyway, to make a long story short, I said, I don't know how to do that, Mildred. Oh, and she called me. Listen to this. Mildred had never called me. It's international calling, and I get a phone call. I'm on my way to the airport because I can fly free because my twin had just told me that Mom died. So I'm going to Nashville. And she said, Sherry, something pulled me out of a meeting to call you. I'm going, oh, my God, it was exactly like what happened to me 20-something years before that when Jenny asked and called. I said, it pulled you out of a meeting. She said, yeah, it was a tug from God. Are you okay? I said, no, Mildred, I'm on my way to Nashville. Mom died. I was going to call you as soon as I got to the airport. But you don't talk to Mildred when you're driving. You don't talk to Mildred when you're doing anything. I would be still when I talk to Mildred because I need to hear. And out of respect, you listen, okay? She said, well, I want you to practice the presence of God with your twin. I said, well, I don't know how to do that. She said, okay, Sherry, do you believe on page 53 that God either is or isn't? I said, oh, yes, ma'am, I do. She said, do you believe if it's alive, if anything's alive, God had to make it? Whether it's a tree or whether it's you or whatever, I went, yeah. Okay, then there's a little piece of God, something in your brother. Can you believe that? I said, no. She said, Sherry, there's something. You focus on that. You know, I said, okay. So I'd look at Terry. We were picking out the caskets and all that stuff, and I'm upset, and I'm looking at him. And she said, I want you to call me back at 4 o'clock after you've met with a preacher and all that. So I do it, and I'm thinking presence of God with a preacher, and I'm in harmony, you know, all this. I'm looking at Terry, and I'm saying, okay, God, I know you are there, all this. And I'm, you know, no, don't feel it. I called Mildred. I said, no, that didn't work. She said, don't ever, I'll never forget this, blasphemy God by saying he doesn't work. He always works. The big book is written in future tense. Try, continue, practice, do it again. I said, oh, my God, okay, I don't want to blaspheme God. And I didn't even know what that meant, but it was bad. So, you know, the next day, she said, no, I don't want you to tell everybody, your kids and everybody about it. Just do it. I said, okay, ma'am, yes, ma'am. Except she was nice. So we're at the funeral and everything, and I'm looking and say, okay, God, I know you're there, and I'm trying to focus on the God in him and the God in me. I'm trying to do this, and I'm really, and then all of a sudden, I mean, it's over, and all of a sudden I say, somebody talked, and they said it just came out of their mouth. I said, Terry, y'all all want to go eat, you know, out to eat in Brentwood after this? And Natalie thinks, she knows I'm not on Xanax, but she thinks I ain't. She goes, Mom, you, because I can act as if, I always act as if I was nice, but they knew, my kids know I'm fixing this. Chew him up, spit him out. But I meant it. It came from the heart. And what happened is we made it from Nashville to Brentwood, and I was totally at peace with Terry. When you're in harmony, this is my experience, harmony with God, you're at total peace. And I was. It was like we were one. It was amazing to me. Now, we didn't make it through dessert till I wanted to kill him, you know. But Mildred goes, at least you're capable of getting there, Sherry. It's about practicing it. I said, oh. And then Sandy Beach would say, Sherry, look out in the room. How many people do you see? Oh, Sandy, about 500. No, there's only one. You're delusional. There's just one. Well, it took me about 15 years to understand that statement. But there is a little bit of whether, or Don Majors calls it a spark, a little spark. Some old-timer in Memphis calls it a piece of velvet. Some people say a spark of the divine or Holy Spirit or whatever. If you're alive, there's something in there, okay? And as we continue to go to meetings and have that light get brighter and brighter, I think that's what we're here for. And, you know, Mildred said it's all about continuing. You know, now I was afraid of her, and my kids, Natalie goes, well, Mom, now you know how everybody in Memphis feels about you. They're scared about you, too. So that's why God put Mildred in your life. I said, well, maybe so. I said, I don't know why they're scared of you. Well, just because of who you are. I said, so I'm trying to be nicer, okay, except with Doris. And so I know I got to stop. But I forgot to say this. My husband died 8 weeks ago today. We were married 49 years. And he was in Al-Anon because of God. Al-Anon, we even got to host Bo at the 50th anniversary of Al-Anon. So Jim's in Al-Anon. I have the kids in Al-Teens and Al-Tots. But what happened is it helped us. When he died, we were partners, okay? And my kids are real codependent. So Jim died the week of Super Bowl Sunday. My kids go, Mom, come over. I said, no, I'm going to have all the ex-cons come over. I work with people in prison. I've got six of them that have come out of prison. They're in Memphis now. I love them. Natalie goes, you're going to have an ex-con Super Bowl party? Well, yeah. They've never had one. They didn't even know what it was. I said, y'all, come on. Lindsay, you bring Sean. You bring Brittany. And I took a picture of all. They'd never been to a Super Bowl party. They go, what do you do? I said, well, you just watch the game. I don't care who you're for. And we have chili, and we eat. It's a Super Bowl party. Oh, my God, Sherry. They were so excited. Now, I've known them for 2 years. Not like I just go to the prison and pick them up and y'all come. But they are at my house today because I don't have anybody there to watch my dog. So the ex-cons had done all my flower beds yesterday and today. And I trust them with my life. I don't call them ex-cons to their face most of the time. But what happened is Mary had me. I'm not a prison person, never been to prison. I don't even look like I need to go to prison. And Mary goes, oh, I've got somebody left at MRC. It's going to Henning. Biggest prison in the state of Tennessee. They have 1,000 women. It's recovery. There wasn't one AA there. Not one. Not an AA book. I go there. Oh, God, I fell in love with them. Of course, I have to get them big books, and I try to get big books from the groups, and the groups don't want to give, and then I find somebody that gets them for $2.60 off Amazon so that every person. Next Saturday, I'll be there. There'll be 70 women in this group. They'll all have a big book. There's 100 pods with 100 people in each pod. I got each pod a 24-hour reflection. They got to read it in the morning. There may only be 10 in that pod that want to stay sober. They do drugs in prison now. I didn't know that, but they do. And they can get drugs. But these stay sober, okay? So that when Jim died, one of them had never had a car. I said, Sean, you can have Jim's car. He starts crying. This man's 45 years old. He's crying in my house. I said, no, the car's yours. I said, don't cry. The car's got about 200 miles on it, but Jim loved it. It's an Armada, and, you know, he got new tires. He wouldn't get a new car. So I gave it to Sean. See, I believe in this program. You cannot outgive. If you're not in here giving, you're doing something wrong, because I get to receive it. When I see my house, they go, oh, you're going to love when you come home. And Jimbo's okay. So I got here today. I knew I didn't want to cry. I was at Woodstock about five, I don't know how many years ago, and there's a lady named Emma. Her husband had just died, and Dick Anderson asked her to speak, and she was up there. She didn't want to talk. And I thought, well, if she can do it, I can do it. So I'm going to end this with one thing on this page. It says, what is this power that AA possesses, this curative power? I don't know what it is. I suppose the doctor may say this is psychosomatic medicine. I suppose the psychiatrist might say this is benevolent interpersonal relations. I suppose others would say this is group psychotherapy. But to me, it is God, and I'm grateful to be here. Thank y'all.